It was very, very fascinating to get to listen to all that. I should start by saying one thing about the future of government. So my next big research project is looking at government in 2020. So 6 years on. And we will launch a interactive website that I think is going to be the most extensive look at this topic out there, and we'll identify over 200 different trends in terms of the future of government, and we look at it both, what are the major drivers, societal, economic, geographic drivers that will be impacting government, and then what are some of the mega trends we will see, mega shifts, and then we'll drive it down into the major areas of government: education, energy and environment, transportation, human services, and so forth. So look for that, and feel free to give me an email, send me an email, but it will be something we're looking for your interaction and output on. It's really meant to just drive a conversation about what is likely the future of government going to look like and what should it look like. But I would say that what we found was that, as you mentioned earlier, that society, that public administration does tend to follow broader society and other trends. But what I think is becoming more and more dangerous when I talk to a lot of senior government officials is the feeling that the gap between where the private sector is and others and government is getting wider. And mainly because of the technology gap is getting wider. And the reason for that is that we are in an era of exponential technological change. And that it's the first one in human history, essentially. So every other period of technology change operated on an S-curve. And what that meant was that advances would occur fairly quickly, but then it would level off for oftentimes decades and give us a chance to figure out our processes and systems around how to take advantage of that technology. And then it might go back up again after we did that. All the other technology revolutions occurred in that frame. What we're seeing with the digital revolution is an exponential curve. It's not leveling off. It's just getting faster and faster and faster. And it's why so many people kind of feel like they can never catch up and keep up with things. So it's going to be a very, very big challenge for government in the future. And it's one of the reasons why I believe in kind of this new role for government to play. So that's the first thing. And I should mention one other thing about the digital transformation. I mean, we're going to be seeing things like augmented reality, and that's where essentially there's a digital overlay over the physical environment. We will be seeing that in hospitals and schools and all sorts of other places, police officers using it, ubiquitous sensors. And so a lot of these very, very big changes, and the technology is happening much faster than many of you might think. And there's two major key areas. We talked a lot about digital engagement with the citizens, but there's the back office piece of digital fulfillment. And if you follow some of the big problems that we've seen in some, for instance, in the U.S. with our healthcare.gov websites, and we see it now with our veterans, it's the fulfillment part that's very, very difficult to do. It's not so sexy, but if you can't get that right, that's when you end up with some of the really, really big issues that face citizens. That's my first point. My second point is, Mr. Bonaretti, I think you set it up so well when you talked about the three big choices government has in the future, and it's something I talk to a lot of audiences about, where government can, you know, as you mentioned, government can basically say we're going to cede a lot of this to the social sector because we can't move fast enough. Government can compete against it. Another thing is government can try to prohibit a lot of this from happening. But I think the answer, and I would actually argue that the Cameron government and big society has not decided that they're going to cede at all and remove themselves, But in fact, what I think the leading governments are doing, and I would say what's interesting is that we see center-left and center-right governments who are leading in this area, is looking at government as the catalyzer. And government trying to catalyze a lot of this innovation and essentially creating an enabling environment for these innovators to thrive, and then looking at how government processes and systems can integrate with this and achieve maximum public value. Because what's going to happen right now is, if we heard a lot from the speakers, that all the constitutional systems and the systems seem to be that government is kind of moving along slowly, and then you have this fast track of all these social innovators and technological revolution and so forth, a parallel system will develop. And there'll be one system for people who can kind of afford it and understand all the technology and so forth, and another system, which will be traditional government, and more taxpayers will say, why do we have both? Why are we paying for both? So I think it's going to be very, very important for government to understand what its role is there. And again, I think it's more, it can be both an integrator, a solution recruiter. Erica mentioned about wave makers in government, and absolutely. We just published a whole series of pieces on intrapreneurship in government and the new role of a government leader. And I think the new role is increasingly what some people call a tri-sector athlete. And that's someone who can work across the public sector, private sector, nonprofit sector very easily. And they might move back and forth between the sectors, and they're very good at connecting them. Because there's always going to be more innovation on the outside of any organization than the inside, and that includes government. So it's government officials' ability to leverage all of that innovation that's going to, I think, essentially bring in the most public value. So when you look at government leaders of the future, when I talk to young government leaders, they're all about trying to figure out how to connect on the outside to bring that innovation in. Thirdly, I do think when you look at, again, a lot of discussion about regulation and the difficulties of where regulation seems to be moving at a certain pace, and also the systems, I think that is actually one of the hardest issues to face, because again, you even just look at technology, when it's moving as fast as it is, regulation is not designed to keep up with that. And so more and more we're doing some work on this. More and more we see a system essentially where the regulations come, and by the time the regulations come, the technology has already changed completely and it's already leapfrogged past that. So we have to come up with another model for doing that. And I think that model is something that's much more iterative and much more of involving kind of prototyping and beta testing and so forth and so on. But a model where you put a regulations in and it sits there for the next 25, 30 years, it doesn't work in the digital age. It simply won't work. And I don't know of any governments anywhere that have quite figured that piece out. But that's all I had. I really appreciated all of the fantastic presentations. I hope, looking forward to the report and future of government that's coming out too. And are we able to take questions from the audience?
Avete delle domande? C'è qualcuno che vuol fare qualche domanda? Edgar? Bene. Si è fatto tardi? No, se avete delle domande, noi siamo qua. Prego.
Grazie. Io mi chiamo Maria. E vengo da Monte Scaglioso, provincia di Matera, proprio in maniera particolare per questi eventi anche da anni, e quindi tutto quello che ho sentito dire stamattina in maniera particolare oggi pomeriggio io lo vivo a Monte Scaglioso, perciò ecco, pubblicamente chiedo, specialmente col dottor Bonaretti, se ha la bontà o di ricevermi o di tutto quanto, in questo periodo mi trovo ancora a Roma, perché io combatto contatto con le amministrazioni
grazie,
del comune di Montesquieu.
E
quindi
conosco benissimo il Castel, c'hanno un convento stupendo dove facevano dei concerti jazz d'estate, quindi, con Nicola Rigliano, ricordo molto bene.
Approfittiamo anche che c'è Wilson Tre Mauro, la ringrazio.
E quindi proprio se volesse consigliarmi, perché sono almeno 13 anni che combatto grazie, con le amministrazioni grazie. E quindi ecco soprattutto questo tenermi, non volermi mettere a corrente con i dati, con le cose, con tutto quanto, con i documenti, soprattutto perché nel mese di dicembre c'è stata una frana tremenda
davvero. Sì. Non penso che il nostro ospite internazionale
sì.
possa rispondere.
No, no, proprio,
la ringrazio.
Perché è, no, è importante.
Sì, no,
perché
no,
ecco, i dati.
Io ecco, andiamo a mandare
no,
il documento.
Ho detto che conduco questa associazione di utenti consumatori che si chiama Movimento Difesa del Cittadino.
Grazie signora, grazie.
Quindi come si è riconosciuto non solo a livello nazionale ma anche europeo.
Grazie.
Quindi questo,
grazie signora. C'è qualcun altro che vuol fare una domanda? Magari la raccogliamo un pochino. Nessuno? Bene, allora ringraziamo tutti voi per averci seguito, ringrazio tutti coloro che sono intervenuti e ringrazio soprattutto Eggers per la sua competenza e tutte le cose che ci ha raccontato. Grazie. Thank you.